Welcome to the Fire Drill Podcast. We invited early retirement dude on today to talk about life since he early retired 12 years ago at age 36, what it's really like being a Reddit mod, and a real-life Wolf of Wall Street story.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast, where side hustles, savings, and creativity lead to financial independence. With your hosts, Gwen from Fiery Millennials and Jay from Millennial Boss.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to today's episode of the Fire Drill Podcast. My co-host Jay and I are very excited to introduce you to Early Retirement Dude. Welcome to today's show.
Hi there. Yeah, thanks for having me, man. I just want to throw down a ground rule up front, just because you guys, I imagine you've heard this joke, but just because you guys are the Fire Drill Podcast does not mean I'm going to jump out and run around my car six times. So
that's actually a huge part of the show. Oh, damn it. Well, it was great to have you on. Sorry, this isn't going to work out.
Good night.
So, Early Retirement Dude, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, see, I don't know. It's a strange conversation to have, because it's when I got started on this, I've been retired for about 12 years. I retired when I was 36. And when I got started on this, there was just nobody else doing it that I knew of. Now, you got to realize this was before the internet, pretty much. It was before it was widespread anyway. I mean, we had some dial up, but it was really difficult to find other people back in the early 90s who were into this kind of thing. I'm not going to claim to have invented, you know, this idea, but I kind of came up with my plan in a vacuum, you know, by and large. And so for a long time, it was kind of a strange thing. I felt like a, you know, bug in a jar or whatever. My friends they had no idea. How did you pull that off? What, early retired, man? You're going to die. You're going to go broke and be eaten out of a dumpster and all that. Coming up through a background like that, it was kind of colored by some of the stuff that I had gone through in corporate America. And I had the same, you know, crummy job that I think a lot of other people had, you know, soulless kind of gray cubicle. The same as many people, I guess I just wanted out. I just had to get out. 401ks were just proliferating. Pensions were being killed off. It seemed pretty clear that there had to be a way out of all of that. So I latched on to some simple math, started doing compound interest equations, and realized, you know, holy shit, this is doable. And did it. That's kind of a vague background. I'm not giving you too much that's specific about my history, but it was a strange journey, and to have come out the other side of it and have lived that way now for over a decade. I'm so happy to see that kind of what I came up with alone, or what I lived through alone. I mean, again, I didn't invent it, but what I lived through alone, there's now this big community and support group around it and all this. We were just talking about, FinCon? How are you pronouncing that, by the way?
FinCon,
thank you. See, there's my ignorance. I'm just now getting into this whole movement and starting to meet other people who are involved with it. And it's a huge contrast. It's a huge contrast to the way it was for me. It's a huge contrast. So I'm so happy to be, you know, a part of this thing. Yeah, it's so cool.
Yeah, I mean, as millennial growing up with the internet, and you know, everything's at the tip of our fingers, and all you have to do is know what to search for. Even just, you know, you can go down a rabbit hole and just, you're like, how did I end up watching a video of two cats play with a banana, you know? but our job is just to follow the information that other people have made available. You know, it's just, it's easy.
It's hard to be a trailblazer nowadays.
Yeah, yeah.
There was no, I mean, you know, when I got started, it was like blaze trail for who? You know, there's nobody behind me.
You know? Everyone's where, like, that guy over there. We don't know what he's doing.
I'm just this weirdo, you know? I mean, it was, you know, I was in MBA school when I first started thinking about this, really just learning the building blocks of it. I got an undergrad, or I got a you know, MBA in basically new venture finance and the concepts behind, you know, actually starting a business and growing it and trying to make it pay off and selling it were surprisingly similar to coming up with an early retirement plan. I mean, you know, you have an earnings stream that you want to try to maximize the potential of, and you got to manage your cash flow, and you got to balance out your expenses against your income and all this. So it was a very, you know, these are very similar concepts. And at the same time, I was working in both commercial and campus radio, and you know, I was a disc jockey, and so there was that, you know, rock and roller lifestyle thing. But when I finished MBA school, I jumped over into corporate America immediately, and it damn near killed me. You know, you go from being, having this like totally free lifestyle that you really enjoy, this 24-hour party for your whole life, and then all of a sudden, there's this enormous culture shock. And I imagine your listeners can identify what that kind of thing is because they've been through it. But it was it was almost a necessity.
Your radio voice, by the way? Did you have like a funny like radio voice?
It's changed. I don't do this kind of. I'm Biff's. I don't do that crap. I was a little more. I did the morning show, and I was like, my co-host was this really nice, laid back, awesome dude, and so I had to be the sarcastic one, like the jerk, to balance.
I know how that feels.
That was doable. That wasn't much of a stretch. But yeah, so there was a huge, huge contrast between the life that I had, and the life that I had worked for. And it was sad kind of that I had worked so hard for a life that I realized I didn't want. You know, so getting out of corporate America wound up being a total sanity thing. I just had to. I wasn't cut out for it. And so I was like, well, how can I get out of this as quickly as possible with a minimum amount of risk? And it just sort of led to, you know, getting on an early retirement track. And I don't think that's very much different than what, you know, you, especially millennials, are going through right now, because corporate life is even more toxic, you know, now than it was 20 years ago. And
soul-sucking.
Oh, yeah, right? And God damn, the open office environment. I can't even believe you guys. Why don't you, like, rise up in arms and
No, it's actually really fun. Like, I just spent the last 2 hours getting distracted. See, open office, they think that would make it, like, more productive and collaborative. But really, once one person hears somebody else talking about their weekend or anything else unrelated, everybody else pulls their chair over, and then we're all listening to this story, and we're not doing anything. That's what it's like in practice. In my experience,
I just, yeah, I mean, it's just what you guys go through is just awful. We didn't have the student debt burden. I mean, I'm Gen X. We didn't have to deal with that. We didn't have unpaid internships, and so on and so forth. So, it's probably twice as necessary now as it was when I was going through it. I don't know how you guys press on. I really don't. My hat's off to you. And, I, honest to God, I, anybody who says millennials are whiners, I just want to say, oh, okay, you know, let's go. Let's take your shoes off and put theirs on and go do that for 2 weeks and let's see.
It's always nice knowing that we have somebody in our corner fighting for us.
For a second, I thought he was going to say, take your shoes off and let's fight or something.
Well, yeah, you know, this is, I know exactly what it was like to get shit on by baby boomers. Yeah. I'm not going to turn around and shit on you guys.
Yeah, exactly.
So
you've been retired for 12 years now, you said, right?
Yeah.
So how has your early retirement changed from, you know, 36 to now?
It's normalized. I mean, I don't feel like I'm out on a limb anymore. Our disaster recovery plan is pretty much, well, we'll figure it out. That's pretty much all it is. it's just who I am, what I do.
So here's another follow-up question for you. So how has your concept of early retirement changed since you started getting more involved in the FIRE community?
It's been, you know, I think in the FIRE community, we have too narrow a definition of what early retirement really means. And I would like to see people, this is a realization I've come to, and I would like to see more people think about this point of view. I've used the example that I live in a town where we get train kids, you know, vagabond, you know, train kids a lot. And I don't like look down on them at all. I mean, I think these are people who have made a lifestyle choice that allows them to keep their freedom, you know, and money is relevant because it keeps it going. It keeps them going from day to day. They buy cigarettes and tall boys and so forth. But I don't, you know, I don't look down on them for choosing to enter into that lifestyle without money, or at least without the amount of money that I have and that others have and that a lot of people aspire to. I don't think that's as relevant to them as it would be to me. That's been a big change in my thinking. You know, I used to think there was only one way to do this. You have to, you've got to get enough to cover your expenses. You have to, you can't take any risk at all. You've got to have everything planned out and regimented. And I don't think that's true anymore. I don't think that's true anymore at all.
Living in advance. I like it.
What's that?
I said more open-minded. I like it.
Well, it's a big world. There's certainly all kinds of options. Look up a cat named Daniel Suelo, S-U-E-L-O, Suelo. He lives out in Moab, Utah, and has lived completely cash-free since right around Y2K. Doesn't touch money. Doesn't use. Eats out of dumpsters and lives in a cave and stuff. And I admire the guy personally. I mean, he retired before I did.
Well, you know, if you say, you know, lower your needs, then the amount that you need to retire on is less.
I think that as your needs go down, I think you become much more philosophical about what you're doing. You know, it's not that you're rationalizing the fact, you know, it's not like you're rationalizing something that you really don't want to be doing. It's like, you know, I'm out bumming around and living out of my car and, you know, because I don't have any better options. It's more like, yeah, you know, attachment is the root of suffering. I don't necessarily need $1 million to be out here and be happy. I can go do what I want, you know? And so I think it's, you know, you start replacing math with philosophy. And that's something that never even occurred to me. I thought this was a numbers game. I really did. I've said that before. Thought it was all a numbers game.
So other than becoming more open-minded, what, if any, surprises have occurred in the 12 years?
Oh.
You had this elaborate plan, and you had everything set and ready to go, and then something popped up.
Well, there have been like some terrible gut checks. The housing bubble and then my wife getting breast cancer. Those were just enormous gut checks. And kind of in opposite ways. It's funny. I mean, the collapse of the housing bubble was all about money. You know, it's like our lifestyle is threatened because of money, or the lack thereof. And then, you know, my wife's breast cancer was all about fuck the money. My wife's got breast cancer.
Nothing else matters.
Nothing. Suddenly, you know, and those two things happened within a couple of years of each other. So it was a complete, both of those events really spun my head. And I think that was the point at which I started moving away from having a contingency plan laid in for every, you know, potential eventuality or whatever, to being like, okay, it's going to be all right. You know, we're decently smart people and we can figure things out, and we live in a supportive society, and we have friends, and there are job opportunities out there, and everything's going to be okay. Looking around and relaxing and recognizing that, you know, yeah, it's going to be all right. So those are some real changes. Those have been some real changes. Did I answer your question? I'm sorry, I'm rambling.
Yeah, no, those are huge surprises that have popped up. Mad props to you for handling breast cancer. That's just awful.
Well, she handled it. I mean, I had it.
Well,
I mean, she handled it. My job was just to be there for her. I can't. What was going on in her head? I can't even imagine. You know?
I'm watching somebody on my Facebook feed go through their child got diagnosed with leukemia, and just seeing the amount of support and things that she's going through it's hard. It's very difficult on the family around the person who has cancer as well. So, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of slack that you had to pick up, when she was in chemo, you had to do, housework and the kids and all that stuff that she just wasn't able to pick up.
I'm going to tell you something, and this is something I learned, and this is something that may be a little shocking, but in a very weird way, I feel fortunate that we went through that, because you get the opportunity to learn how to care for people when they're very much down and out. You get the opportunity to learn more compassion and learn more deeper connection and empathy and how to take care of somebody. And so I think those are things you can read about and understand in theory, but once you are actually called on to put them into practice, there's a big human tragedy to this situation, but it's also in some ways a gift, and I think you have to, I think it's an opportunity to really grow as a human being when you go through something like that. So I would say, when things like that come up, they're horrible, but there is there's a pretty deep and even a cool and helpful life lesson to learn from situations like that. I hope you guys never have to go through one. I hope you guys never have to find that out, but that was a pretty profound kind of realization for me. Yeah.
It's really powerful.
So,
I don't even know what to follow up with.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's a really hard. We can't switch directions there. I guess one thing that I am interested in. I know that you are the moderator for the FI, the Financial Independence subreddit. How did you get into that, and what's that experience like?
That's a great community, and I was drawn to it. I just sort of stumbled across it by accident, and I was like, oh, hey, my people, I mean, again, it had been a kind of a lonely road in that sense that, not too many people were doing this thing. And so discovering that there was a community out there of, at the time, excuse me, I want to say of maybe 150,000 subscribers, and which granted a lot of them are abandoned accounts and lurkers and stuff, but to discover that there was a community that size really drew me in. And then, I started contributing a lot. I did an AMA and I started contributing a lot and learning a lot.
Just in case people don't know, what's an AMA?
Oh, ask me anything. AMA, ask me anything. If you're not into like Reddit, it's an interview. Somebody comes in and says, I am Bill Gates, ask me anything. And people start asking questions. Not that I'm Bill Gates, but that's the model. He did an excellent one. Barack Obama did an excellent one. I mean, a lot of people have chimed in. And so it's an interview, but it's more of a panel discussion. It's not filtered by some, journalist who's in between of you and the subject. So it's a really cool opportunity to get your questions in and learn. And so that's what an AMA is in about 1,000 words. But I did one of those, and I guess I'd been hanging out there for a year or so. They had needed a mod. I had been around for a while, and so they just a couple of the people who were there approached me and said, "Hey, would you like to do this?" And like, yeah, sure. Why not? I mean, you guys are good people, and I get a lot out of being here, and it's a lifestyle that this is a message that needs to be spread. This movement really needs to be spread. And that was an opportunity for me to do that. So I kind of jumped in and tried to help. It's funny because the sub, as I mentioned earlier to you, Gwen, the sub pretty much runs itself. And I'm speaking, there are other moderators, and I don't want to, I'm speaking for myself here. I'm speaking personally. There are other moderators who may feel differently, but it's a sub that exists to serious purpose. And, there's a lot of humor in it, but at the same time, this is we're talking about making a complete lifestyle change. And so you have to approach that with a certain amount of gravity. And so there's not a whole lot of room for we don't have a whole lot of room for trolling, name calling, you know, that kind of thing. And it gets weeded out pretty quickly because it distracts from the main message. I mean, you wouldn't, not that this is heart surgery, but you wouldn't drop into a, Reddit, a subreddit on heart surgery and start throwing around, you know, dropping C bombs on people and all that. That's just not what's there. You know what I'm saying?
So. No, I don't, but that's okay.
Well, let me tell you.
how much time per day do you spend on this?
On just
on being the mod.
On being a mod? Right. Not much. 15 or 20 minutes, really, if that much. I mean, I go in, there's a mod queue. I go in and, you know, okay, so we've got 10 or 15 posts or comments that are piled up in the mod queue. Look through them, you know, where's it's a judgment call. And, you know, does this fit? Does this not fit? What's going on here? Is somebody, are they just trolling? Are they just trying to get a rise out of somebody? Is this a serious question? Is it in the right forum? You know, it's that kind of thing. I mean, it's really not bad. Most of the job is just listening to people.
Do you ever go in and have to delete comments?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think it's funny when we, people will say, and this is funny to me. People will say the mods are, and this is true of any subreddit. It's not just us, but people will say, well, the mods here are slackers. Look at the content they're letting get through. Look at this crap that's getting through. This stuff doesn't belong here. And I have to laugh at that because it's like, well, look, man, by definition, you don't see the stuff that doesn't get through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't know how much work is going on the back end. So if you're going to get bent out of shape about one comment, let me tell you about the 50 that I
So are you just seeing, I mean, like the worst of the worst? That's really what you're doing, just filtering out those people?
Honestly, most of the posts that get removed in that are simply off topic. That's all.
There's no, you know, gossip for us? Any like behind the scenes?
Ooh, yeah. Tell us the juicy detail.
Yeah, tell us.
There aren't any. I mean,
boring.
There's no troll who gets banned every day and you're just like, go home.
No, I mean, we, you know, occasionally we ban somebody, but it's generally because they are hardcore trolling and there's, you know, they, we don't feed them. We just ban them and they write back these, you know, the typical troll notes. Why did I get banned? How come so-and-so didn't get it and I did and all this? And you just ignore it.
Do you want to know a secret? My blog subreddit or my blog Reddit username is on two strikes from the mod team on the subreddit because I broke a rule twice and I didn't realize it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What, in FI?
Yeah.
Oh.
So you're going to have to get a new username?
Oh, well, no, I realized what was going on, and I stopped before the third strike, before they banned me, for the permaban. I kept putting my blog name in the, what's the little tag next to your name?
The flare.
Yeah, I kept putting my blog and my flare, and that's self-promotion, and it wasn't allowed.
Well, yeah, I mean, we do have a pretty strict self-promotion rule, and honestly, this is... I'm a little uncomfortable talking about this subject at all because I don't want to let the mod work I do there overlap with what I'm doing on my own blog. It's just, I try to keep those things so separate. This is the most I've ever talked about this, to be honest with you.
We'll put a disclaimer in the notes.
Yeah, well, please, whatever you could do, yeah, because it's we do have a no self-promotion rule, and we're pretty strict on that because everybody would, I mean, the spamming, the forum would just completely turn into a giant spam pit. And so, yeah, there. If you want to, we do a lot of that, but when we do remove something, or at least when I remove something, again, I'm not speaking for the entire staff, I'll go in and send somebody a note and say, hey, look, we don't, I can't let you do this. If you want to edit your comment and leave out the link to your own article and just maybe give us the gist of it or whatever, that'd be great. But, you know, please, I can't let you plug your own. No, we're not monetizing this sub. That's the bottom line. I mean, nobody's going to get to monetize this sub. It's free. It's free information. We're trying to make a difference in people's lives. Please don't come in and try to commercialize it.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't even know you can monetize a Reddit subreddit, though. You can do that?
Well, yeah. I mean, we have a weekly self-promotion thread. It's the one place when you're allowed to come in and say, hey, I have a new blog article on that. But don't post an affiliate link there because we'll nuke it.
I see.
Yeah. Ooh.
Actually, I put the link to our podcast launch page there. But I can see
yeah, that's what it's for.
And again, I just want to be super clear about this. I'm not speaking for the rest of the staff. I'm just giving you my own take on my own philosophy about how I approach this. So I don't want to – I don't think there is a voice of that sub. I think it's a community, and I certainly don't want to be mistaken for somebody who is the voice of that sub. That is – we all – it's a community.
I don't think anybody's going to accuse you of being the lone mod voice.
Well, but I have to go to bed tonight, and I'll lay there thinking, you know, did I?
Well, then you email us, and we'll edit it out. So
let's start completely over.
Welcome to today's show.
There are three other subreddits that I do want to mention here. So there's the r/financial independence, which is the main one. Then there's r/fatfire. And for those of you who are not aware of that, that's the thread for people who want to achieve early retirement mostly want to achieve financial independence, but they want to achieve it with a massive amount of money and a starkly different amount from everyone else in the financial independence, from my understanding.
Dollar bills, y'all.
Yeah. And then the third one is a new one, r/fiery femmes. So fire, YFEMMES. And that is for the ladies.
Hello.
So just calling those three out in case, you know, you find a better niche for you.
I feel like we should. Are you going to say lean fire? Because I'm going to say lean fire.
That's what I was going to say. Go ahead.
Oh, apparently I'm not into lean fire because I'm not subscribed to that one. Not for me.
Yeah, gee, wonder why.
And but, there's all these kind of satellite, you know, communities out there that are financial independence communities in a way, like van dwelling, our van dwelling, our vagabond, you know, communities like that deal with these same issues. It's like, how do I get out of that lifestyle? How do I blaze my own trail, like we were talking about? And they're all dedicated to that same concept. They just take it in different forms. There's a Europe. Isn't there like an EU fire?
There's like EU fire. There's like Dutch fire. There's Australia fire. I think there might be a New Zealand-based one too, but I think that they kind of fold into the Australia subreddit.
Well, there you go. I mean, the word is spreading. I mean, I use the word movement deliberately.
Yeah, well, and I feel like it's somewhat more appropriate for people in other countries and other regions to start their own, just because so much of the advice is U.S.-based. And if you're in Europe, you don't have a 401k and you have higher cost of living, you have pensions, you know, you don't have 401ks, so it's completely different.
Well, it is different in the technical side. It's not different in the philosophical side.
True.
And that's why I think just a general FI forum is always going to have a place on Reddit. It's just we all come together with the same issues. We just have different technical ways of working them out. And so, in terms of like being a support group and a source of encouragement, I think FI can be a good place for people, which is one reason I think the mod staff tries to, you know, keep it on topic and personally why I have a light touch. It's just let's engage people instead of running them off, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Keep it pure.
So let's go back to how you actually fired. Were you a straight savings 401k? Type person, or did you do real estate, or did you start your own business? What was your strategy?
I had worked for a, you know, your basic run of the mill kind of corporate place that you were paid on a scale of, and I had a chance. It was in the public sector, basically. It was a government owned corporation, and I think with about two Googles, you'll be able to figure out what company it was, but. Very gray place, and I quickly realized I was lucky enough to get in on the ground floor of a new industry that was rising out of that, and so I jumped over into the public sector pretty quickly. I'm not the ground floor, but maybe the second floor up from the bottom. And so I, you know, my company, I made some good money. I made some decent money. I had moved from kind of a small city, kind of a mid-sized city in the southeast, up to a major northeastern city. And so there was all this, you know, salary arbitrage opportunity. I was working in a startup there was all these good opportunities to sort of grab money and keep it. I never made Wall Street money, but you know, I mean, I think our earnings at the peak of our earnings, right before I split, my company had a really good year, and I cashed in some stock options, and I think my wife is working, and I think we made something like $350,000 that year.
Damn, son.
Well, it was like a one-year thing. And I mean, I was running real estate at the time and stuff. So if you considered all of the sources, you know, I mean, but we're talking about New England. You know, I mean, we're talking about big towns where it takes, we've got to make $100,000 just to pay the rent on your apartment. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it was a high, high, high cost of living.
350K is chump change. Come on now.
Well, you joke. But, I mean, you know, think about it. I was working in the financial district, and, you know, there were definitely people making shit tons more money than me. I was middle management, you know, and there was a lot of money. The guy who owned our company, or owned a big slice of it and wound up selling it off, is running a big investor capital pool now. And that guy, I can't even tell you how much that guy's, he used to be my boss. I mean, but he's just, you know, he had that opportunity in that company. But anyway, so I was in the position. I mean, you asked about, you know, how I was able to, basically what was my accumulation phase like, is I think what you're asking me. So I had a good, my company was good to me. I had a good opportunity. I jumped on it. You know, I saw it coming. I jumped on it. Took all the advantage I could on it, made money, and kept it. I mean, that was basically it. I did run some real estate. It was before the housing bubble let out. Everybody was buying multi-unit buildings and condoing them out, and that was the game up there. And so that's what I did. Got fortunate in that I sold off a couple of them as things were peaking, and then I sold off another one. I had three units. I sold off a third one as things were just coming over the top and beginning to slide down. made good money on those. Actually, it's interesting because two of the three people I sold to got foreclosed on.
Wow.
Whoops.
Not long after. So I basically passed the hot potato to the next guy in line, and he's the one who got stuck there.
At the perfect time.
It was lucky. You know, it was lucky. But that was it. You know, I wasn't out blowing money on, well, blowing. I was not spending my money on a lot of, like, ostentatious kind of material stuff.
Come on. You didn't want hookers and blow every night and,
well, I'm not saying
bottles of Dom Perignon and, you know, Armani suits.
To say, did I want them and did I actually buy them or two
different things.
And the stories I could tell you about being in that industry. And,
is it like, is Wolf of Wall Street true? Have you seen that?
I never saw excess to that level, but yeah. I saw some things that, you want me to tell you a story? I mean, do we have time for this?
Go for it.
We'd love to hear it.
I'm at one of our, we had these big industry junkets, and I'm at one of these, oh my God. I'm at this big industry junket, and you know, nobody really goes to the conference. Everybody's just going out schmoozing. And this also was in Dallas, this was in Houston, in Texas, a lot of strip bars. So my friend and I are going out to breakfast, nursing our hangover cures, and in comes his newly hired assistant, who just looked like death warmed over. This kid, I thought he'd been run over by a car or something. I mean, he was dragging so badly. But he comes in and he says, my friend and I look at him, and we're like, what the hell happened to you? And he's like, this, I just had the greatest night of my life. He had been one of the, we worked with brokers, okay, and these brokers collected a pretty big commission based on doing deals, you know, setting up deals between us and, you know, other companies that were in this market. So the brokers would schmooze us pretty heavy. And this broker had taken him out to one of the strip bars in Houston and gotten him, you know, way drunk. And then he's out in the parking lot. Afterwards, they shut the place down, and the two of the girls who worked there come out, and they, you know, he's like the only guy there because he shut the place down, and they ask him, can we get a ride home? So, geez, I don't know how far I can go with the profanity, but you may want to edit this out. He gives them a lift home, and one of these girls is going down on him on the way home. And then he spends the night with both of them, and there's cocaine involved and all this stuff, and
literal hookers and blow.
And he's telling us all this, and he's like, yeah, that was the greatest night of my life. And so we sort of, my friend and I, we just kind of lean back in our booth and we look at each other. And then, my friend goes, look, man, you understand that all that was bought and paid for, right? See what I'm saying? Yeah, that's what they did. I mean, this broker had this new kid who was working at a company that he wanted to wedge into because there was a lot of money to be made. And he knew this kid had a career ahead of him. And so he was getting in early with this kid. He was like taking him out, showing a good time, making sure.
A really good time.
And that's how it worked. So when you ask about the Wolf of Wall Street, that stuff went on. It was probably over dramatized for that movie, but yeah, that kind of thing.
But not by much.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I didn't work where they worked. I can't really say, but it wouldn't. I mean, the more money is at stake, the bigger and bigger the schmooze gets. So who the hell knows? I don't know if you want to include that story or not, but it's maybe a little too colorful. But
this has been an anything goes type podcast so far. But I guess coming from that type of lifestyle and seeing some of the people that you've worked with go on to make a lot of money and do all these things, do you have any regrets? Even like a tiny little piece of you wonders if you had stayed in the industry, what your life would have been like?
I turned down a directed transfer when this is crazy. I didn't quit. I actually got laid off because we had a buyout right before I was going to split. And I realized that if I stuck around for a little while longer, I was going to get laid off and could get a severance package. So I did that. As far as regrets, if I had stayed in that business, one of two things probably would have happened. I would either have continued to make money and get promoted and probably would be some kind of an executive vice president or God knows what now, doing pretty well for myself. Or I would have been just completely blown up and fired and my reputation ruined and run off out of the industry and wound up having to go into consulting or something like that. That's what happened to a lot of people who stuck around and kind of missed. Once you start getting passed over for promotion, I mean, you know how it is. Once you start getting passed over, you're done.
Yeah.
And so that's probably, do I regret leaving? Do I regret getting out of that lifestyle and stuff like that? Not even for 1 minute. A guy that worked for me, a guy that I hired, had developed during that period of time when I was working there. He developed a pretty hardcore alcoholism. And I just found out not so long ago that he's actually died. He died in his like late 30s.
Oh, no.
A lot of it was the stress from that lifestyle and the amount of money he had accessible and that amount of money. I make it sound like it's a lot, but I mean, you got a guy, he's a guy in his late 30s. He's working in a big city. He's single. He's sharing an apartment with somebody else. I mean, he was making roughly $100,000, which again, sounds like a lot, but in a place with such a high cost of living, how much is it? You know what I'm saying? I mean, you're living in a $2,500 a month apartment, So anyway, he drowned himself in alcohol and died. And a lot of it had to do with that job. And just, the stress and the constant, there's always somebody who'll pick up the check. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. To get back to spread the message of early retirement. What I've described sounds like a very fun lifestyle on the surface of it, but it's as toxic as all hell. And I think that the toxicity of the workforce continues to get worse. And I think more than ever, showing people that, you know, it's possible to get out of this thing with your health and your sanity intact, is really an option. I think showing people that that's something they can really accomplish is more important than ever.
There's something about this community that makes it acceptable to be obsessed with money because you realize the value of your time. But the other, the description that you described about some of the people you worked with, they valued the money way more than the other elements. So I always find that maybe not hypocritical about our community, but it's kind of like we are very obsessed with money, but it's in a good way.
I guess you could say that. Yeah. It's certainly a different set of priorities. I'm going to just be straight up, and this is probably going to get me hated on a little bit, but I do notice that we in this community, we do sit around patting ourselves on the back a lot. You know, it's like I'm going to disagree with what you say, and I mean this in a respectful way. I mean, I'm not trying to dog you on that point. I feel like it's.
I'm trying to take you down there. That's why I said it.
What?
Did
you just set me up?
I'm teeing you up. We're spicing it up. Go ahead. Tell me how you really feel.
I think that, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, there's not just one right way to live your life. And I think that people forget that. I think that in our community, sometimes people are prone to forgetting that. It's like, well, I'm getting out of this whole thing. I know I've got the truth here. I know that. Corporate America is awful and I know how to get out of it and I take good care of my money and I, you know, and all this. And I kind of, honest to God, I when I start seeing people go off on that a lot, I cringe a little bit because it's, my thing is that if you're not hurting anybody, then do what you like.
You know, I pat myself a lot more on the back, but right now I have two holes burned into me by a dermatologist, so I'm not going to touch my back because it hurts.
Yeah, you better be careful with that.
Yeah, pat yourself on the head, then.
I don't think that has the same connotation.
Well, that was one. Well, that was of all the ways to derail me from that.
I wonder though if your perspective is painted a little bit by what you see on Reddit. Because personally, I started using Reddit after I'd already been reading blogs and been very involved in the Twitter community, and the feeling sometimes in the financial independence subreddit feels a little bit more hardcore than I think a lot of other places where you can get this information may be. Like, for example, sometimes there's really intense people who are like, you gotta do it this way, index funds, you know, they're like replying to other people just being super intense.
You know, as somebody who's kind of new to the blogosphere and in general has not mixed with other people who are into this lifestyle much, I mean, I'm still getting started, you know, in this community. And it's hard for me to speak to that because I have not been outside Reddit all that much. Certainly in like any kind of, certainly in any kind of like serious, you know, group, I think there's an amount of humility that gets called for. I try to shoot for that by admitting that it's not, that I don't have all the answers. I don't think there's one right way to live your life. I don't know to what degree that Reddit's subforum compares to some of the forums outside or some of the community outside. I just found out about FinCon. Quite frankly, I have always seen it, but I just have never really looked into it because I'm like, okay, it's a conference, you know, and now I'm finding that maybe I should go, that I might like it. You know, so, and that's what I mean. I'm new to this community, and so I just can't speak to those attitudes really beyond what I'm seeing. Maybe you're right. Yeah.
What do you think?
I have to.
I definitely think that Reddit's a bit more hardcore and militant, whereas the blogs realize that there's a certain amount of variance and give because everybody's different.
I don't know, man. They're words on a screen.
You know, so I think that people tend to get really caught up in the details of FI on Reddit and maybe not so much put in an allowance for different situations.
Well, at the end of the day, we're all people. You know
what probably is? You are constrained to a character limit, really, in Reddit. No one's going to let you, like, a blog publish a really lengthy post. I mean, you can, but it's not that common. So it almost feels it's absent of some of the emotion and the other pieces of FI. But it's more like, give me your numbers. I'm a 26 male making 150,000. How many years to FI? And everyone's like, don't do this, do that. For some of the threads, some of them are really great. And I recommend everyone get to join the and subscribe to the subreddit. But it can get a little bit.
It's hard to stand out in a crowd. Okay, I'll say that, and I'll say also, I mean, there's almost 300,000 subscribers there now, so it's hard to stand out, and it's hard to like have a human face. Let me put it that way. People don't know who you are. They may not even recognize your username. You're just saying something, and they're interpreting it through their own filter. But there's that, and it's also like people aren't trained writers. You know, they may say one thing. On the internet, there's that, and like what they hear is what you said. Okay, what you say isn't what you said. What they heard was what you said, and so that's when, you know, people, like I said, they're not professional writers, and so they could, a lot of people could, and all over everywhere, not just FI, but people could. And this is one reason I kind of trust the internet forum for ideas, but it's hard to say what you mean when you're trying to write the truth and trying to speak from your heart and, you know, address the human condition. But you pulled C's in high school English, or, you know, maybe it's going to be hard for you to really speak up clearly. And I think everybody falls into that kind of problem. I think, like I said, we're all people. I think we all care about each other. You know, we want to share and edify, you know, one another. But there's that blockage in the way. So my point being that when you do start getting out in the blogosphere, you actually see people's faces, and you say, "Hi, I am so and so. This is my child. This is the town I live in. This is my summer vacation. These are the things I believe in. These are my religious beliefs." You begin to appreciate them more as a whole person, as opposed to just a kind of a couple of sentences on your screen. And maybe it makes a lot more of a difference. So I don't know. Does that? I think maybe you and I are starting to agree on that. Maybe I'm talking my way around into your viewpoint, where the blogosphere is a little more open and relaxed. But it's I don't know. It seems like it's more of a, it becomes more personal. It's easier to be more personal with one person than with 300,000, right?
True.
By definition. Yeah.
I think this is a nice full circle way to come back to what you said in the beginning, where when you were first pursuing early retirement, you didn't have anyone else to go on. So you kind of made up whatever worked for your life. And now we have so many people and experiences to draw on that it's very easy to just say, okay, this is the way to early retirement. This is why I'm doing it. This is how to do it. Whereas as individuals, I think we all need to take it upon ourselves to figure out and piecemeal from everyone's experiences, as well as figure out what our own path is.
I think that's great. Isn't that wonderful?
It's amazing.
Yeah. It's awesome.
All right. Well, speaking of hookers and blow, we and
have you got something to go do?
I've got plans. Sorry, you know, it's getting to be that time. No, we ask each guest at the end to tell us what their wildest dream is. So, what is your wildest dream?
You assume that mine is hookers and blow. That's great.
I just said speaking of hookers and blow, because sometimes that is people's wildest dream, you know, having a threesome with a couple of strippers and doing cocaine, you know, whatever.
My wildest dream, you know, I never have yet found the kind of strong passion that I see in other people for the one thing. You know, I've found something I want to dedicate my life to. I never have found that. I've come to believe that it's okay to have a whole bunch of different interests. That's fine. But then I look at people like, you know, Jonas Salk, Jonas Salk and the polio vaccine, you know, and it's like, wow, you know, if I had, he was passionate about that. What could I have done had I found a passion like that, or had I developed one? You know, could I have helped the human race in some gigantic way? My brother has been fortunate, or, well, lucky and talented and a very hard worker. on the other side of it now, but he's a professional athlete, and he fell into his love of his sport when he was, 14 or 15. He's not a football player, basketball, or anything like that. You're not going to see him on TV, but it's a sport that's well known, and it's and within that sport, he's got really good name recognition. And you know, he found that thing for himself and wanted it and developed it, and it's been very good to him. He can truly say that I found this thing and I got really good at it, and it's been really good to me. I've always wanted that. I've always wanted to have that thing that my whole life was centered around, and I never did. I never have had that. I wonder if I had made some different choices, like, you know, when I was in college and stuff. All I wanted to do in college was like get drunk and screw, right? But okay, I'm the only one who thought that was funny, apparently. But the I made some different choices, I feel like maybe I could have come across, you know, something like that, more exposure to more of the world, maybe. But yeah, wildest dream, I would like to have that. I don't. So that's it.
That's a great one.
All righty. Well, that's awesome. How can our listeners get in touch with you?
Okay, so if people want to get in touch with me, my blog is earlyretirementdude.com, earlyretirementdude.com. They can also reach out to me at my email address. It's earlyretirementdude@gmail.com, and you can come on Reddit if you're there, and you can always PM me. ER10Years_throwaway. So you can always reach out to me through that.
All righty. Sounds great. Well, thank you very much for appearing today. We had an awesome time.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Go to our website, firedrillpodcast.com, to continue the discussion and get the link to our private Facebook group.
If you like us, leave us a review on iTunes. If you're like me, you have no idea how to do that. So in the podcast app or in iTunes, search for Fire Drill Podcast, find it, click the reviews tab, and write something to make my mother proud of me. We read every single review and want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts for making this podcast possible.